Good morning, Mendocino. This is Jeff Blankford welcoming you to the February 13th, 2013 edition of Takes on the World, a public affairs program that comes your way in the second and fourth Wednesdays of every month, every other fifth Wednesday when I open the phones to you, our listeners, as I did 2 weeks ago. On my last regular program, January 23rd, I spoke about the confirmation hearing for former Senator Chuck Hagel as Secretary of Defense that would take place before the Senate Armed Services Committee on January 31st. Given some controversial statements that Hagel had made regarding Israel and U.S. policy toward Iran, and as he called the Jewish lobby, I predicted it would be more of an inquisition than the typical hearing for an appointment to a president's cabinet. I couldn't have been more on the money. Observers of Hagel's 9 hours before his senatorial inquisitors have described it as a witch hunt, which it was, and more than one characterized the interrogators as a Senate on Israel Affairs Committee, which it also was. I lived through the period of the anti-communist witch hunts and have watched newsreel footage of Senator Joe McCarthy and the House Committee on Un-American Activities bullying witnesses and shredding the U.S. Constitution. What this Senate committee did to Hagel, which you can still watch on C-SPAN, was no less despicable. By this time, it was not the witness's loyalty to the United States being questioned, but his loyalty to a foreign government. And the lack of outrage and questioning by the national media of the committee's behavior, including by Democracy Now!, indicates the degree which they too are under the sway or fear of Israel's American proponents. This is why I focus on it. The takeover of the U.S. Congress by the agents of Israel is too important an issue to be ignored. Americans, quote, must be a race of angels, wrote Israeli octogenarian and political activist Oryav Neri before the hearing. How else, he says, to explain the incredible patience with which they suffer the fact that in a vital sphere of U.S. interest, American policy is dictated by a foreign country. For 5 decades at least, wrote M. Neri, U.S. Middle East policy has been decided in Jerusalem. Almost all American officials dealing with this area are, well, Jewish, he notes. The Hebrew-speaking American ambassador in Tel Aviv could easily be the Israeli ambassador to Washington. Sometimes, he writes, I wonder if in meetings of American and Israeli diplomats, they don't sometimes drop into Yiddish. Hagel's most heinous sin is not often mentioned, Avneri noted. While serving as a Republican senator for Nebraska, he once uttered the unspeakable words, quote, I am an American senator, not an Israeli senator. That's really the crux of the matter. U.S. senators are nearly all Israeli senators, writes Avneri, ditto for U.S. congressmen. Hardly any of them would dare to criticize the Israeli government on any issue, negligible as it may be. Criticizing Israel's political suicide. Not only does a Jewish lobby, this is Avneri speaking or writing, not only does a Jewish lobby use its huge resources to get loyal pro-Israelis elected and re-elected, but it openly employs these resources to unseat the few elected officials who dare to criticize Israel. They almost always succeed. Those words were written by Oryav Neri, a former member of the Israeli Knesset, a committed but unusual Zionist, founder of the Gush Shalom peace movement, who will be 90 years old on September 23rd. Avneri was wrong in only one respect, as you will hear in a few moments. Hagel's statement that he was a U.S. senator, not an Israeli senator, was one of the charges leveled against him by Lindsey Graham of South Carolina. Yesterday, after a postponement of several days, the Senate Armed Services Committee voted to send Hagel's appointment to the full Senate along party lines 14-11, while Senate Leader Harry Reid said he would ask for a vote either today or tomorrow for the full Senate. One of Hagel's fiercest opponents, Senator Jim Inhofe of Oklahoma, the ranking Republican on the committee, is planning on preventing that vote from taking place, telling the right-wing National Review Online that he will, quote, postpone the nomination of Hagel for, quote, as long as it takes. I'm going to make sure there is a 60-vote margin. Hagel may be passed out of the committee, said Inhofe, but it's going to be a long, long time before he hits the floor. We're going to need as much time as possible, and there are going to be several of us who will have holds. Each day that goes by, said Imhoff, will make it more difficult for Democrats who say they are pro-Israel to hold out. I want everyone to be very clear about his past statements and positions. Well, today at about 20 minutes past the hour, I'll be speaking with Stephen Snigowski, author of Transparent Cabal, The Neoconservative Agenda, War in the Middle East, and the National Interest of Israel. We will be discussing the implications of Obama's appointment of Hagel, the extent to which the former senator may have been damaged by this inquisition and his responses to his accusers, and the role the neocons who brought us the Iraq War have played in opposing his appointment. For those of you who did not tune into C-SPAN, or listen to excerpts of the hearings elsewhere, to get an idea of what Avneri and I am talking about, I think it's important you hear a few clips. So now, for the next 8 minutes, I'm going to play comments and questions from 3 senators, 1 Democrat and 2 Republicans, and portions of Hagel's replies. The first voice you will hear is that of Senator Kirsten Gillibrand of New York, followed by 2 clips of South Carolina Republican Lindsey Graham, and finally one from Texas Tea Party favorite and first-termer Ted Cruz. Let's go to that.
I'm going to submit several questions for the record because they're important to me as the senator from New York. But today I want to focus on the most urgent issues from my perspective. I want to talk more about your thoughts on Israel and Israel's security. I want to talk about Afghanistan, and I want to talk about personnel issues. So on Israel, obviously our relationship with Israel is a tremendously important Israel, and we are fundamentally tied to them because of being such a strong democracy in the Middle East and having our national securities very much being tied in many ways. With regard to Israel, Israel's security is very important, and I've been one of the strongest advocates for our alliance, fighting for more increases in missile defense cooperation, as well as coordination on a number of the technology programs that are fundamental to Israel's security. Last year, Iron Dome more than proved itself as missiles from Gaza continually headed towards Israel. In December, Ranking Member Inhofe and I successfully pushed for full funding of the U.S.-Israel Cooperative Missile Defense Systems. Will you personally support robust funding for Iron Dome, David Sling, and other programs? Will you also, if we have to have a continuing resolution, the funding for Iron Dome will be well below the authorized amount for fiscal year 2013. In such a case, will you recommend either reprogramming other funds or sending forth an anomaly budget requesting to fully cover our commitment to this program?
First, I fully support and will continue to fully support Iron Dome and Arrow and David Sling. As to a commitment to the second part of your question, I would have to better understand what our restrictions are going to be in our budgets before I could make any decisions like that. And I would have to talk with our chairman of the Joint Chiefs and each of the chiefs, and want to better understand, depending on how bad and deep this sequestration might get. But make no mistake, it's clearly a priority program. I believe we will continue to fund it. We should. I'll support the continuing funding.
Well, I hope you'll also be a strong advocate, because our budget is, even under sequestration, significant. And this is a very high priority, certainly for me.
And that was Kirsten Gillibrand. Now, Lindsey Graham.
Let's talk a little bit about
Lindsey Graham.
Statements you made. You've explained this a bit. You said the Jewish lobby intimidates a lot of people up here. I'm not an Israeli senator. I'm a United States senator. Mm-hmm. This pressure makes us do dumb things at times. You said the Jewish lobby should not have been, that term shouldn't have been used. It should have been some other term. Name one person, in your opinion, who's intimidated by the Israeli lobby in the United States Senate.
Well, first,
name one.
I don't know.
Well, why would you say it?
I didn't have in mind a specific person.
Do you agree it's a provocative statement? That I can't think of a more provocative thing to say about the relationship between the United States and Israel and the Senate or the Congress than what you said. Name one dumb thing we've been goaded into doing because of the pressure from the Israeli or Jewish lobby.
I have already stated that I regret the terminology.
But you said back then it makes us do dumb things. You can't name one senator intimidated. Now give me one example of the dumb things that we're pressured to do up here.
We were talking in that interview about the Middle East, about positions, about Israel.
So give me an example of where we've been intimidated by the Israeli Jewish lobby to do something dumb regarding the Middle East, Israel, or anywhere else.
Well, I can't give you an example.
Thank you. Do you agree with me you shouldn't have said something like that?
Yes, I do. I've already said that.
Senator Inhofe said that you were one of four senators who refused to sign a letter in October. And the first paragraph says, we write to you to express our solidarity with the state of Israel at this moment of crisis and our profound disappointment and frustration with PLO Chairman Arafat and the Palestinian Authority. We're dismayed that they would allow violence by Palestinians to be carried out without restraint or comment. This was when the Infada was being raging, and Senator Inhofe, led by Daschle and Lott, wanted a letter from every member of this body to clearly put us on record that we believe Arafat and the Infada is undercutting the agreements they had reached and they had resorted to violence to intimidate the Israeli government and people in a way that was just absolutely unacceptable. If you had a chance to do it over, would you sign this letter now, and I'm going to give it to you during whatever break we have, and ask you to reconsider. I would ask you, Senator Hagel, to tell the country, the world at large, particularly the state of Israel, you made a mistake by not signing that letter.
I'd like to draw your attention to an interview you did in 2009 with Al Jazeera. And with the chairman's indulgence, if we can play an excerpt of that interview. Now, in that excerpt, Senator Hagel, the caller suggests that the nation of Israel has committed war crimes. And your response to that was not to dispute that characterization, but indeed to describe what he said as, quote, well, I think that's exactly right. I'd like to ask you, do you think the nation of Israel has committed war crimes?
No, I do not, Senator. I'd want to look at the full context of the interview, but to answer your question, no.
I mean, the context of that question, we played the entirety of it, and I wanted to give you that context so you can hear the question and you can hear your response. I would suggest that a suggestion that Israel has committed war crimes is particularly offensive, given that the Jewish people suffered under the most horrific war crimes in the Holocaust. And I would also suggest that for the Secretary of Defense or a prospective Secretary of Defense not to take issue with that claim is highly troubling. I'd also point out, in 2006, your characterization of the nation of Israel's action, and that was in a speech on the floor of the Senate, you referred to Israel's military campaign against the terrorist group Hezbollah as a, quote, sickening slaughter. Now, I would suggest the characterizations. Do you think it's right that Israel was committing a, quote, sickening slaughter, as you said on the floor of the Senate?
Well, I think, again, I would want to read all of it, what I said. First, I've said many, many times, Senator, every nation has a right to defend itself.
And do you think a sickening slaughter would constitute a war crime?
No. Depends on they were attacked. Depends on many factors. If Israel was defending itself, there was slaughter going on both sides.
Does one typically characterize defending yourself against terrorism as a sickening slaughter?
No, but again, Senator, I'd want to look at everything because...
Okay, well, let's look at another excerpt from the same interview, if we can play.
And he played another interview from Al Jazeera, which we couldn't hear, but you get the tenor. These U.S. senators were putting the interest of Israel before those of the United States people and government. And when Hagel was asked, one senator who had been intimidated, he might have just said himself at the very moment that he was being interrogated, and one dumb thing was to get us into the Iraq war. But you heard both Democrats and Republicans, and there were many more that expressed their affection for Israel and their main concern for Israel's future. The White House has announced that President Obama will make his first trip to Israel. when he lands at Ben-Gurion International Airport in Tel Aviv on March 20th. He'll be received by both President Shimon Peres and Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and given a state reception. And then he'll be given a second reception at the presidential residence in Jerusalem, after which he'll head to Yad Vashem, a required ritual for visiting heads of state, accompanied by Peres and Netanyahu, where he'll lay a wreath in the Hall of Remembrance. Then the next stop will be Mount Herzl, Israel's national cemetery, where Obama will lay a wreath on Theodor Herzl's tomb as a gesture to Zionism, and continue to Yitzhak Rabin's tomb, laying a wreath there as well. In the afternoon, he's expected at the Prime Minister's house, where he and Netanyahu will discuss issues such as Iran, Syria, and the Moroccan peace process. That meeting will be followed by a joint press conference. The next day, Obama will head to Ramallah in the West Bank and Palestine, spend the morning with Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas, and return to Jerusalem by noon, when he will be taken by Netanyahu to examine a model of the Second Temple period of Jerusalem, or at least how modern-day Israelis imagine it. Then he and Netanyahu will visit the Shrine of the Book, where Netanyahu will show Obama the Dead Sea Scrolls. That's in the Israel Museum, where Obama will be shown the latest developments in Israeli high-tech, biotech, nanotechnology, and agriculture. That afternoon, the president will make a speech and have a dinner with President Peres, and he has reportedly asked for an audience of at least 1,000 people. On his last day in Israel, Obama is expected to visit an Iron Dome battery with Netanyahu, and then he'll depart for Jordan, where he is to meet King Abdullah. So in sum, he'll spend 3 days with the Israelis and 3 hours with the Palestinians. That about sums up the Washington's relative relationships between the two peoples.